President, RAG, today in Cesaria Khan. We will go ahead here and move on. Oh, any declarations, new declarations of any conflicts of interest for today's meeting?
I do have a conflict in 318-19C.
All right, so let's move on to our So we'll move on to our investigation files under 4B. Our first file that we will review is 18-06-B, which is Dr. Alan Kravitz. Dr. Kravitz is present with his attorney. Did they fill out the form, Christina? And our the investigator is Dr. Polakoff. So, and your attorney's name?
Robert Goldsucker.
Sorry, I haven't seen you for a while.
It's been a while,
I know.
You haven't changed a bit.
All right, so Dr. Polakoff is our investigator, so she will start things off with her report.
Good morning, Board. I'm Dr. Deidre Polakoff, and this is case 1806B. And this is a case where a patient filed a lawsuit. The lawsuit was declared on the doctor's application for relicensing on a normal basis. The patient performed a procedure called Keck and Kelly, which I did summarize in the report for you. The patient had a Hagman's deformity, and he decided that this procedure was a good surgical approach to decrease the Achilles tendon irritation so the patient could get back to work on a rapid basis. The patient works outside inspecting pipes. He is a 320-pound-plus male with severe heel pain. He did see a doctor, Jessica Duggan, and she informed him that surgery was indicated, but he would need a considerable time to recover. He did see Dr. Kravitz after that, and Dr. Kravitz estimated that the time of recovery could be within a 10-week period to recuperate from surgery. Unfortunately, the patient did end up with a post-op infection, osteomyelitis. He had to go through wound care. And I did find out from Ms. Brown that the patient has returned to work full-time. The patient was on a short-term disability, but that had ended. The patient was fixated during the time of surgery with two staples for the Keck and Kelly. During the recovery from anesthesia, the patient from what I gather from the notes, was a little bit agitated and bumped his plaster splint, which had to be reconfigured and reapplied during the postoperative course. My concern in this case is I like the procedure, the Kevin Kelly. The x-rays look good. My only concern was with a 320-pound plus male, that two staples might not be satisfactory to stabilize the heel. This, of course, is the surgeon's priority. Surgeon's opinions as to what can be done in surgery. Of course, I was not there, but the patient's osteotomy site was always the cause of the problem post-op and developed a dimpling effect and then the osteomyelitis. My conclusion for this is unsubstantiated with the concern of just the postoperative fixation.
Did you see any intra-op x-ray or any other kind of imaging that showed everything was
good? The first thing I looked at is I thought that the osteotomy site might have been weakened with the patient being agitated post-op on the gurney. And during this first post-op, Dr. Kravitz did make a note that everything was good, and I saw no evidence of it moving, but in subsequent x-rays, there was a shift.
And there was no indication of any injury?
No.
Yeah, the only other concern that I had was, even though I know that the procedure doesn't, you know, he's not directly working on the Achilles tendon, but there was a period of time when he prescribed Levaquin. And since there's that chance of rupture, you know, that was my only concern as to why that had been a selected antibiotic.
I would have assumed Levaquin would be an appropriate one for the osteomyelitis, the first one to get in there. Then he was transferred over to wound care, and then the IV vancomycin and everything.
And I also know in the history of the patient that he had two angiograms. Do you know what those were? They were just listed in the history. I was just curious if there was anything else about vascular studies that were.
No, but the weight of the patient, I would consider that would be a possibility anyway, and. So he would have been a high-risk patient.
Anybody else have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
No.
Dr. Lincoln?
No, not really.
Dr. Kraft, do you have a statement, or is your attorney going to speak for you?
Dr. Kraft should speak for himself. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
So do you feel that was there anything unusual in the case or anything else you think we need to hear from you about with this patient?
Well, the outcome was not as desired. It was a poor outcome case. I mean, he had some shifting of the osteotomy, and he also had a pressure ulceration that developed on the posterior inferior aspect of the calcaneus, which ended up becoming infected, which ended up developing osteomyelitis. At the time I placed him on Levaquin, he did not have an osteomyelitis diagnosis at that point. That diagnosis was made after he was already out of my care. Okay.
Why don't you address why you didn't use the screw shortness fixation?
Sure. Most calcaneal osteotomies that I've done, I've used screw fixation for. That's for calcaneal slide osteotomies, for Dwyer-type osteotomies, I've used screw fixation many times. I've also used staple fixation for standard Dwyer osteotomies. Going through residency training, the staple was one of the main fixations that we learned at that time for calcaneal osteotomies. In this case, and it's ironic, but I chose to use the staple fixation, two compression staples, as opposed to screw fixation, because I wanted to avoid creating an extra incision on the back of the heel, which sometimes can create some difficulty healing the wound of the screw insertion. Like I say, it's ironic, because that's where he ended up developing his pressure irritation, and that's where he developed his wound. So I don't think the staple fixation at the time was below standard of care. In hindsight, I wish I had used a screw. A screw would have performed likely stronger fixation. And I question whether the patient did weight bear or completely follow my instructions, although I didn't blame the patient during the recovery period in order to allow the osteotomy to shift postoperatively. And I don't know if a screw would have made a difference in that aspect. Big guy, if he had weighed air weight on it, it may have shifted, regardless of the fixation.
So what's your standard non-weight bearing time period after that?
6 weeks. Depending on the response of the patient.
Any questions, Dr.
Why do you think the ulcer formed? Was it pressure from the cast? Was it a vascular issue?
I don't think it was a vascular issue. This was a non-diabetic, non-smoker. He had strong pulses and good clinical circulation to his extremities. I think it was pressure from the splint. May have been either the foot shifted in the splint or the position he was holding his foot at rest created a pressure spot on the back of the heel.
Yeah. In the patient's letter, I gather that there was some concern about him getting back to work within 10 weeks after this procedure. That's one of the reasons he said he chose to do the procedure that you did. Do you think a guy 325, 10 weeks is enough time for this to heal, to get him back?
Well, in our discussion, there was certainly never a guarantee. I mean, so my thought process was, for a Hagelin's deformity, what procedure had the best chance of getting him back in that time period? And my thought was that if I could avoid the Achilles tendon and not have to deal with Achilles tendon inflammation and residual pain, which we all know can last for months after that type of procedure, especially in a person who had to do climbing as part of his occupation, then I was looking for alternative options surgically. And I found an article which led me in the direction of considering the Keck and Kelly osteotomy, knowing that bone healing, when it's uncomplicated, after 6 weeks, there's adequate bone healing and strength to begin rehab and to begin his activities safely.
Right. Yeah, I think, as long as you gave him the option that, hey, this may heal in 10 weeks, but nothing's 100%, that there may be a problem even with this procedure. I think as long as you let the patient know that ahead of time, I think you covered your bases and you did the right thing. I like the procedure. I like Keck and Kelly's. I think they're not used as often as they should be for the reasons you just gave. It's a great option for this. But unfortunately, complications happen, and unfortunately that's what happened here. And it became infected and osteo and ended up being a drawn out situation. But I don't think it was based on the procedure that you chose. I don't think it was based on your care. I don't think it was based even on the fixation. Two staples in the body of the calcaneus generally heals pretty well, unless you walk on it or something slips. So I don't see an issue with your care in this case.
I agree. No, I'm happy.
I would then move to dismiss the case if I find no violations of any state statutes.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Dr. Kravitz.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell.
I'll see you guys next time. Bruce has a conflict with one of his doctors.
I'll see you
next time. It may be years, but I'll see you again sometime.
Okay. I'd rather never see you on that side of the table.
I can cross this off my bucket list now?
Yes.
Drive safe. Next case is no. Okay, so we will then move on to our next. We're going to go to 18-19-C. Oh, okay, so we have, okay, so then we can go ahead and do our other case before that, since that we have that time frame with the complainantee. Okay. To be able to, the complainantee on this case is going to go via phone, so can we...
I'm not sure yet.
Okay, we'll just go ahead. We should be able to proceed with the other case quickly. Yeah. 18-17-C is Dr. Hugh Ryan Hall, and physician or is present either as a complainant, and Dr. Polakoff is our investigator, so she can proceed with her report.
Good morning, Gord.
Good morning.
Dr. Polakoff here on 18-17-C, Hugh Ryan Hall. The complainant, GC, made an appointment for treatment of an ingrown toenail. He did have a prior history of trauma to that ingrown toenail. When he left Dr. Hall's office, he said that the toe hurt, and he waited 3 weeks and got an appointment with another doctor to have that partial toenail removed to help solve the pain. He is frustrated when he received a bill from Dr. Hall because the doctor charged for an office visit, treatment of the toenails, treatment of calluses, and he is on limited funds with his insurance, and he does not want to have to pay for extra treatments. And he is frustrated that when he left the office, he was still in pain. In review of this concern, I did speak with many people. With the patient who expressed his concerns of the toenail still being in pain, with Dr. Hall for being surprised that this patient had problems with the treatment because he stated that he didn't even remember this case because it was so straightforward. With Dr. Bodmer, because the patient made some allegations that Dr. Bodmer made statements against Dr. Hall's treatment. Dr. Bodmer stated that he never did this. The only thing he stated was that if Dr. Hall was ever considering a Taylor's bunion surgery on this patient, that he would try more conservative therapy first. Dr. Hall was called again, and Dr. Hall agreed that he never suggested outright surgery for the patient. It was just a suggestion and a plan for the future. The patient's treatment appears to be straightforward. The notes appear to be complete. The financial review reveals straightforward initial office visit, pairing of calluses, debridement of the nails. I found no state violation of this case and unsubstantiated.
Anybody have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
I agree, going through this, that there is no problem that I found. And talking to a patient about different problems that they may have, and you talk about surgery, that doesn't mean you're wanting to schedule surgery.
I agree.
And two, if there was a 3-week delay between the time if he still had pain and he waited 3 weeks.
I agree.
Dr. Wayne.
Motion. Finding no violation of statute in 1817C, I move to dismiss.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. So next case will be scheduled time to call the complainant, so we can go ahead and get some other business done here real quickly.
Before we do that, if we were going to talk about this case, I'd like to ask to go into executive session for legal advice.
Okay, well, so we will say we are discussing 18-17-C, so part of 19-C,
okay, so we are still on agenda item 18-19-C, so it would be B3, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So Dr. Kaplan has moved to go into executive session. Do we have a second?
For legal advice?
Second.
For legal advice, yes. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. So right. Okay, now let me remind you, I will read our executive session statement. That minutes of the discussion made in our executive session are required by law to be confidential and shall not be communicated to any person outside this meeting room. So we're going to our executive session room. Sabrina, have anything you need to help? So, Christina,
I'm going to give him a call right now. Sir, we're going to start right now.
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear us? Sorry.
I can't hear anything.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hi. This is Dr. Barbara Campbell. I'm the chair of the board, and we do not refer to you by your first or last name. We only refer to you by your initials, JF.
Okay.
We have received your complaint, and it has been investigated by Dr. Polakoff. We have found with all your other correspondence to the board that you feel you haven't had proper time to prepare for this. This is not any kind of a hearing. So we have reviewed the materials that we have, and we feel that we do not have all that we need to proceed today with your case. You had mentioned there some recording, if there are some audio recordings between you and the physician and recording between you and the lab. We feel we need to have those to make a complete evaluation of this case?
I don't have anything of the lab. I have two. Dr. Hansen called me four separate times on December 19th and 20th, and I have two of those recordings still saved. Two got erased by accident, you know, through the voicemail process. But
okay.
I managed to save two of them, just as proof that, you know, he was doing everything he could to try to get me to call him immediately, including leaving his cell phone number.
Well, see, this is why we have concern that we need this information for us to proceed and do our due diligence here. So what we are going to...
I have those, by the way.
Well, that's fine, because we... Okay, great, because we are going to have staff... Ms. Gomez will subpoena you for those so that we can continue the investigation, and that gives time to make sure everything is completed. We do thank you for being available today, and we would like you to be present at the next board meeting so that it sure makes it easier to have our conversations than going having you present with us on the phone. So,
well, I do have a question in that regard. I understand that this is not a court of law. I understand that, but it's still an administrative body. And since I'm a little naive about administrative processes, I did talk to a lawyer that I know that's handled many of them in the state of Arizona, and he's a friend of mine. And he told me he was appalled yesterday when he heard, I just found out 2 days ago about this hearing. And Christina Gomez, who I spoke to yesterday, late in the day, informed me that Dr. Hansen had received his notice back in late May.
That's,
and when I asked her why he was not prejudiced in this case like I was, she was speechless, had no answer. So I don't know what to make of that, doctor.
Well, there is no state statute that has a time frame for complainants to be advised. It's 32-3108. It says that you can address the board, but there is no time frame. The doctor has requirements for time frames, so
but not the
complaint. No, and remember too, we are not an advisory board. We are a regulatory board. We work regulating our licensees. This does not work like a court of law. So, and the fact too that I believe you had concerns that Dr. Polakoff was your representative, and this is
yep.
not true. She speaks to all parties and then presents a report to the board. So,
yes, I did firmly believe, based on my lengthy discussion with her back in the spring, I believe in April, that she would be my advocate. Not necessarily a prosecutor, but my spokesperson, my advocate, and that she was, in her own words, going to go to bat for me and make certain things happen and hold Dr. Hansen's feet to the fire, so to speak. And so based on the nature of that conversation, it seemed very clear and apparent to me that she was representing me as a victim.
I'm sorry that you got that impression, but that's not how it works. The investigator is an impartial person who does the investigation, and they do certainly work with all parties, but they do not present themselves.
Well,
she is not an attorney, and I know when
she
talks to people, she addresses them and indicates to them that she is a podiatrist who serves as an investigator to the board. So that at this point.
Christina Gomez, when I first got news of this hearing on Monday, I reached out to her immediately and she answered. And she was going to have Dr. Polakoff call me within the hour. I said, I'll be waiting by the phone. And when that call never came, that's when I tried to reach her yesterday. And she told me at 5:37 p.m. yesterday that she just realized, she being Christina, just realized that Dr. Polakoff is not my advocate. And I asked her why, since she's the executive director of this board, why she would not have known that. And again, she had no answer for me. So you can understand how my head was swimming, and I was left with some puzzling questions about the process as of yesterday afternoon. I didn't understand what was going on. I haven't spoken to Dr. Polakoff in several weeks or a couple months, actually. So this caught me off guard. I have been preparing all morning in case you were going to proceed with the hearing. It was my impression that Dr. Hansen was there with an attorney. Did he not show up?
JF, I have a question. Did you record your conversation with Christina Gomez that you had with her the other day?
No, I did not.
Okay. So if she reports something that was said, is that something that you would either agree with or disagree with?
Oh, I'd have to know what it was.
That's correct. But you have no proof of any conversation other than what you're telling us. And this board does not act as advocates for any of the complainants.
I understand that now.
Okay, and so we're going to go into a motion to ask and subpoena proper records from you.
Well, how would I provide, because the recording is on...
You will bring it when you come here next month to be presented to us in person.
Okay, so you would like me there because Christina told me that I had an option. And
yes, I think earlier in this conversation, we indicated that we would like you here at the next meeting.
I see. Okay. Okay. And well, when will I get notice of that so I can prepare?
You're getting it now, and you will get it as soon as Christina can send it out today.
I see.
Okay, okay, so you can stay on and listen.
Okay.
Sir, our next meeting is August the 8th, and we begin in our boardroom at 8:30 in the morning.
I'm sorry, the 8th? August 8th?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm writing it down. Same time?
At 8:30 is when our meetings begin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And will I hear, from anybody before then, or just...
You'll get a letter.
I think I just mentioned that Carmina will send you a letter indicating the time and date of the meeting.
Yes. And are you reaching out to me for any follow-up information or summary or anything of that nature just to refresh the memory of the event?
No, we have that all in our files that were presented to the board, and all we are needing is the recordings that we have discussed that we are going to request from you that you still have in your possession. So at this point in time, we really don't have anything further to discuss. So with our open session here, I am making a motion to issue subpoena to receive from you any and all recordings that occurred between yourself and the physician. And if you happen to have recorded the discussion you had with Ms. Gomez or with the laboratory that created your orthotics, that would also be quite helpful. Another part of the motion is, and we are continuing this because we feel it's not complete, and the other part of my motion is to have you be present at our meeting, because that way then you can present to us those recordings that you have on your cell phone. Do I have a second from this?
Second.
Or do we have any other discussion from the board members?
I'm just curious, did Dr. Hansen show up today?
Yes, he is present.
Oh, he is. Okay.
Yes,
he's present. I don't know if this makes a difference, but since I have the recordings on my cell phone and would just be playing them there anyway, would it not? I feel like since I rushed the best I could to get ready with my notes, mm-hmm. So I have the recordings now. If the board wanted to proceed, I'm just letting you know that. I can play it over the phone. What? I mean, I can play Dr. Hansen's voice over the phone from my cell phone.
Excuse me again, JF. We have already made this request numerous times for you to be present with those recordings here at the board area next month.
And we've already made that motion. It's been seconded, and we're going to take our roll call vote. Yes, and I'm going to have our Assistant Attorney General, Ms. Sabrina Kahn, is going to review that motion with you so that you are... fully aware of what we are requesting.
Okay, so I'm just repeating this motion for clarity. So it's a motion to issue a subpoena for any and all recordings between JF, Dr. Hansen, any recordings between JF, the laboratory, and JF, and the executive director, Christina Gomez. Was that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
That's correct.
Okay. So that was the first motion. So I'm just repeating it. So would someone like to make that motion?
I already did, and it was seconded by Mr. Rhodes.
So that motion was made and seconded by Mr. Rhodes. So can we do a vote on that first part?
Question.
Okay. We've had no further discussion. This can we don't have to take a roll call vote because this.
No, you don't have to.
So all in favor of the motion, please.
Aye.
So we're still going through the motions.
Yes.
And so then also the second part of the motion, Madam Chairman, is it was to continue the matter as this investigation is not complete, and to reschedule this at a later date, and to also issue a subpoena for the attendance of JF at the next regularly scheduled board meeting, which is August 8, 2018, at 8:30 a.m. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and was that seconded by Mr. Rhodes, just for clarity?
Yes.
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 I have one question.
Is there a vote?
We take discussion. Any more discussion? We'll vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Opposed? It's that motion has been seconded and passed. So at this point, we will see you then on August the 8th. Christina will be reaching out to you to make sure all the particulars, and we will look forward to having you here and hearing the recordings that you have so that we can complete this investigation.
Yes, I understand. I just have one question. I do wish to be there, and I do plan to be there. But I just want to know for the record, is there any statutory obligation for me to be present at the hearing? Any
regulation? We are not an advisory board that provides legal advice. So it is really, it's a personal decision, but it's on your
own.
You have a concern here, and I think addressing it in person is a better way to go about it. That's my opinion.
No, I agree with that. I just wanted to know for my own education.
No, there is no statutory.
There are no state statutes that require that.
I understand.
I'm
questioning
it.
Yeah.
Okay. But
all right.
August 8th. Okay.
Okay. Well, we will see you then next month. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So, gentlemen, thank you, and we will go. See you next month.
Dr. Campbell?
Yes, ma'am.
Can we take a break?
Yes. Certainly. We'll take, 5 minutes?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you subpoena the
recording? Minutes. There is one session of minutes that were not listed on the agenda, so we'll have to table that to next meeting, and that would have been the session regarding the SPAC compensation from Ms. Gomez. So we'll table that for the next meeting. So we can proceed with the general session minutes of June 13th. So anybody find any? Mike, I do have a question on that. Did Dr. Peterson, he's made a payment and still has a balance, or is he completely paid off on his civil penalty?
He's making monthly payments right now.
Okay, so then that would not be a correct statement in the minutes. I think it said he paid it off.
Oh, it did say that.
So that needs to be correct. That's the only thing I saw. Anybody else have any? So I would move to accept our general session board meeting minutes with said correction.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, move on to the executive session minutes, and this is regarding Dr. Leonetti was conflicted from this discussion.
Can we table those as well?
Okay.
Because there's two separate versions of East.
Yeah, I saw that there was two. Okay. So then we will table June, make a motion to the table June 13, 2018, first section of the executive session minutes. It has to do with, what's the case number on that? That would be case number 15-10-C, Dr. Brad Heyman. our next session, executive session minutes, then would be regarding file number 17-17-C, which is Dr. Levin, Bruce Levin's case. Can I even be talking about this since I was recused? Does somebody else have to make the motion to? I was not present in that, obviously. So how is that?
Which agenda item is it?
Dr. That would Campbell? Be our executive session room. I believe that would be, there's two Bs listed under here.
The second 3B.
The second 3B.
3BA. So are we tabling this as well?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to table executive session minutes in regards to the Bruce Levin complaint on June 13, 2018.
Second.
All right. So those are tabled. So we're done.
Yeah. Okay. So now we can move on to letter A, application for registration to dispense drugs and devices. And we have three doctors, Stephen Axe, Thomas Jacob Chambers, Allison Marie Rotman, and Troy Loud. I have something I noticed on our applications for the registration to dispense drugs and devices. And it's got the section on there where it talks about what you're going to dispense from your office. Mm-hmm. And there's drugs and devices, you know, two separate things. And people are listing, obviously, antibiotics, you know, if they have, maybe if they're samples. But I'm questioning how it's worded because people are writing narcotics. Well, you know, now it's unprofessional conduct under the new opioid epidemic law for you to dispense opiates from your office. And I know, you know, people years past would purchase pain medications and such from more medical places like that and dispense them through their office because we have that in our state statute. But I'm wondering now, there were several different applications for people where they listed narcotics. So
right.
I was just thinking, is this an appropriate way to have that described on there, or is that prevent confusion, or is that just something that I just need everybody's opinion on that?
My opinion is I wouldn't be too concerned about it on this year's reapplication, since the opioid policy has just gone into effect. But I think next year, if they're listing narcotics down, they're going to need to describe which narcotics they are dispensing.
Because I don't know, they're just saying like, okay, I write a prescription, you know, for this drug. Do I have to list it? You know, it's why I'm saying it's kind of.
Are they even detailed samples anymore?
No.
The only way, and you don't have to list samples you give out, but this is if you purchase.
Some places list samples because of legal action, meaning that if there's a problem with that sample and you don't know who you gave that sample to, you know, then you have a problem. There are problems. We don't give out any samples.
Right.
Because
and I think a lot of doctors are going that way. But if you have, let's say someone, and I don't even get antibiotics anymore, but if they detailed the antibiotics and I wanted to give someone Cipro to start on, I'm not dispensing that from my office. You know, I'm not making a profit off.
You're giving it to them.
I'm giving it to them.
Right.
So I think that doesn't fall under this. But if I'm writing a prescription and giving them 30 Cipro, then that needs to be listed here. I'm selling it to them. That needs to be listed. Because if you're calling any sample dispensing, then everybody has to put this down because everybody gives out lotions and creams and antifungals and whatever. What's the medicine for nerve pain that they use?
Gabapentin.
Yeah, meta something.
Oh, Metanex.
Metanex, you know.
Medical foods and stuff.
Yes, exactly. So.
Okay. I thought it was a lot of stuff to put down also.
So that just something I looked at that and I thought about that and I didn't know if anybody else had, you know.
Right. I think that the new policy is going to eliminate people dispensing narcotics from their offices. So I think if you see this next year, then you raise a red flag and ask why. What is it? Explain it to us. Because you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, because that becomes unprofessional conduct.
And there's always a little question and red flag when people are ordering that much narcotics to be dispensing.
Yes.
There always is an issue.
So we need a motion?
Yes. So, no, there's no other, yeah, I didn't see any problems with anybody. So, yes, please, Doctor.
Okay. Motion to approve applications for registration to dispense drugs and devices for Dr. Axe, Dr. Chambers, Dr. Rotman, and Dr. Wild.
Oh, I'm sorry, and there was one addition. I apologize. Christina had sent us that supplement, a Dr. Hamad Zafar.
Yes.
That was on the supplement that was sent.
And I will include that in the motion.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. All righty then, we can move on then to our renewal applications for licensing. There is a start here for Dr. Carl Beecroft. So then if we would instead move to his discussion or to this, which is separate under the consent agenda number 5 for Carl Beecroft.
Looks like this is a description of a malpractice case.
Yeah.
Has the board started an investigation on this? That's what
no.
This notes of.
Yeah.
You just got the information.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
So then we can move to, we would just move to accept his application for licensure and
yeah.
An open abortion.
Okay.
So that's my motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Okay, we have number 67 is Dr. Michael Rimini, so Dr. Joe Rimini is conflicted and must recuse himself from the voting, so I will go ahead and make a motion to accept Dr. Michael Leonetti's application renewal.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. So then we have, I believe there is no one else that we need to do any special things for, so I will make a motion to accept all other applications for licensing and dispensing renewal registration from all the
main
physicians. And we have a second from Mr. Rhodes. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. So
we want to open up a board. I'm Dr.
I think that was part of the motion to approve his application.
Yes, I did. And that we would open up a board complaint, yes. So I'm going to go back to the investigation files for 18-19-8. Dr. Myron Hanson, I'm asked to go into executive session for purposes of legal advice.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. So we don't have to move over here. Oh.
I will be.
Some concern about our previous motion on our case 18-19-C. So we'd like to make sure that we have our records are nice and clear and make sure that the proper intent of what we were aiming to do is evidence. So according, I'd like to clarify our motion, and this is according to ARS 32-854-01, which does give our board 0.01, letter H, that gives our board the power to issue subpoenas to require any witness to attend meetings. So according to that statute, we will
Motion to issue a subpoena to require JF's attendance at the board meeting of August 8th, 2018.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So do we need to do any removal of the previous or that clarification just legally? I mean, everything should be okay now.
I mean, I believe it was clarified for the record,
but just to, yeah, okay. Sounds great. So then we move on to Executive Director's Report. We have the Budget Agency Operations and our complaint log.
So there's copies of the budget in everyone's file. So I just want to bring to your attention that the fiscal year has ended, and our expenditure for this entire fiscal year was $140,000. That was the in entire amount expended this fiscal year. We had at the starting point $149,000, and we have left remaining $8,763. So that money will go back to the general fund. For this fiscal year, we have $161,000. So that's for the start of FY19. Does anybody have any questions regarding the budget? Okay, and then an update on the e-licensing. So we are still going through the process of working through the bugs. The most common problems that I've heard from licensees that they have right now is the ongoing spinning issue. So the system doesn't save licensees' work, particularly with the CME questions and fields. So I will be working with DOA regarding this issue because this needs to be fixed. And some people, again, do like this new system, and others aren't happy with it. But this is a work in process. I have a meeting this Thursday with DOA and regarding e-licensing. So I will give you an update of this meeting next month. Regarding the 2018 renewals, so far this year we have received 253 renewals out of 439, so I have roughly 186 more to go. I will be reaching out to people to make sure that they remember they have to renew by the end of this month, because next month then they'll have to pay the late fee.
All right, well, it looks like a big summary of current events. And we can make for our call to the public, so we don't have any public call. Anything anybody wants to discuss at any future meeting? Anything that needs to go in a future meeting? Okay, next board meeting is August 8th, 2018, 8:30 a.m.